welcome. I have a shocking and disturbing interpretation of what Trump is actually doing in re-escalating war with Iran, destroying any hope of peace, and violating his own memorandum of understanding that he signed just a few days ago. In fact, this is a strategy that it looks to me like Trump will be using to invoke a national emergency and then to invoke the Stafford Act, which will unlock FEMA for nationwide operations stemming from a severe energy supply interruption. So I believe that Trump is actually doing all of this on purpose in order to invoke a national emergency declaration that concentrates power in his own hands in the run-up to the midterm elections. So welcome. I'm Mike Adams, of course, brightvideos.com. And thank you for joining me here today. You can follow my articles on this and my infographics at naturalnews.com. So let's try to unpack all of this, because there's a cobweb of federal executive orders, laws, and acts that are interwoven in all of this. Let me see if we can walk through them. So there's the National Emergencies Act. If this is declared, then this will activate all kinds of statutory powers. When it comes to energy, that would be the Energy Policy and Conservation Act, which can be triggered if there is simply a finding of an energy supply interruption. And of course, Trump is making sure that that happens. We're approaching what's being called tank bottoms domestically in the United States, because of course we, as a country, we import 6.5 million barrels of oil a day. And that's obviously in short supply right now because of what's happening in the Middle East. There's also the Stafford Act, and the Stafford Act is what unlocks FEMA operations. So if there's an emergency declaration related to some kind of disaster, and that's loosely defined, then that can unlock FEMA to go nationwide to do all sorts of interesting things. And you remember how FEMA was confiscating food supplies that we were trying to get to people back, what was it, during the hurricanes a couple of years ago in Tennessee, you know, affecting Tennessee and affecting Florida and some of the Carolinas, etc. FEMA was actively interdicting supplies and was blocking people from being able to get help. That's what FEMA does, and that's clearly what they're gearing up to do as well. Now then, we get to the DPA, or the Defense Production Act of 1950. This was written into law to grant the president broad powers in wartime. That's how it was intended. Remember, this is a post-World War II era. It allowed the president or his administration to basically command any manufacturer to do anything. You know, like, you have to make only this, or you have to expand your production lines, and here you have to take this money and build up a bigger production line. This was all, again, related to World War II, but it had different titles in it, different sections, and one of the original titles, it was called Title II, allowed the president to seize all land, property, including commercial property, facilities, buildings, and all materials that were used in production, including critical minerals, including fertilizer, everything. Now, that Title II actually expired in 1953. But since then, the power of the DPA has been expanded, most notably by Barack Obama in 2012 through what's called Executive Order 13603. And this delegated the powers of the Defense Production Act to different agencies, such as the USDA, which now has power to confiscate all food resources in America. That is, if this is invoked by Trump. So this can include the confiscation at gunpoint of all livestock, all farm equipment, you know, tractors, diesel fuel for the tractors, fertilizer, seeds, anything else. This is all part of the original DPA law plus the Obama era EO 13603. Now, Congress has then expanded the definition of national defense, which applies to the DPA. The Defense Production Act, in various sections, refers to national defense. So what is national defense? Well, Congress has continued to expand that over the decades to include energy, space activity, rockets, critical infrastructure protection, which includes, you know, computing, voting machines, right? Electrical infrastructure. And then most notably during the COVID years, that included pandemic response. So because of that evolution of the definition of, quote, national defense, now the federal government can force contracts and can confiscate almost anything it wants from almost anyone with the right declarations. It can confiscate medical supplies, munitions, you know, firearms, technically. Not, I'm not saying that they're trying to right now, but they could. They can confiscate domestic animals, you know, cattle, farm animals. They can ration critical materials. They can say, you know, no aluminum, no copper for you. They can ration diesel fuel or gasoline. And that's probably what's coming, at least the rationing of fuel. Now, this Defense Production Act has been invoked over 50 times since 1950. So if you think, oh, this is something that's just on the books that they're not going to use, that's wrong. They've used it over 50 times, again, most notably during COVID. And each time it's used, it's expanded. The reach is broadened with these expanding definitions of what is national defense. So step back for a moment and realize what Trump is trying to do here. At least in my opinion, this is what it seems like. Unless he's just completely mad, which is certainly a possibility. You know, maybe he's lost his mind and every day he wakes up, he has no memory of who he was 3 days ago, what he signed, whatever, because he does appear to, you know, contradict himself frequently. But suppose he has a plan. That plan could be to actually cause a fuel scarcity emergency, an energy supply emergency that allows him to invoke the Defense Production Act and triggers all of these other dominoes inside the federal government, including the Stafford Act and others, that eventually trigger FEMA. And then he can declare election infrastructure to be critical national security infrastructure. Actually, I think it's already been declared that one way or another. Once that happens, then Trump can say the federal government has to run the midterm elections and that we can't trust the states, especially, you know, California, which just cheats all the time anyway, obviously, and so does Illinois, you know, I mean, Denver and Seattle and Portland, whatever. We know how that goes. And I'm not saying that I want all elections to be run by the federal government alone, because it's actually the decentralization of elections that offers, you know, theoretically some level of integrity to it. Although, of course, California has destroyed that integrity and they just cheat in every single election. What I'm saying is that this appears to be Trump's plan to create a big national emergency. We've run out of diesel, we've run out of fuel, or we're near running out. We have to ration it. And then from that, begin having federal agencies move to control elections infrastructure, also to control AI. So open source AI models could be banned and only the government approved AI models would be legal to use. And then on top of that, they can also have, you know, food rationing. So they can control the food supply and then they can use that to force people into CBDCs because they might be planning, you know, a dollar reset, a currency reset at the same time. You know, the more chaos that Trump could cause, the bigger reset they can get away with, and they can blame it all on, you know, Iran or China or Russia or whoever. Very easy narrative at that point. Meanwhile, the federal government can sweep through your farm and just steal everything under the law. They can just have a team show up, men with guns and rifles. Hey, we're FEMA, flashing a badge. We're taking your fuel. We're taking your tractor. We're taking your cattle. We're taking your seeds. We're taking everything. Yep. Thanks for supporting Trump, you know, and they can just walk away with all your gear. In fact, they could take your land. Ultimately, they can take your land and they could take your home. They can take everything. I'm not saying that they're going to do that nationwide. They're more likely to take things that aren't nailed down, you know, things that they can put on a truck and ship out of there, like your fuel, your tractors, your livestock, etc. And this is how, oh, and if you resist, of course, they're going to take you to a FEMA camp where you slowly, you know, disappear. Of course. So this may be what's being planned, because Trump is already, he's at the point where he probably realizes he cannot win the midterm elections if there's an honest election. And I'm not even talking about the Democrats cheating and rigging as they normally do. At this point, Trump is so unpopular, the Democrats don't even have to cheat. Trump is so unpopular that former Trump supporters are voting against him, or planning to. So the only way that Trump can stay in power, that is to keep Congress with a GOP majority, is to control the elections infrastructure and to make sure the outcome is predetermined. In order to do that, you need a big emergency. In order to have a big emergency, you need something that affects everyone, something like fuel rationing, food rationing, ongoing war, you know, big critical emergency, where they can also censor freedom of speech. They can just cite, you know, emergency powers. They can also control all civil transportation. They can block all highways. They can require permits to travel. They can control the trains, the planes, and the automobiles, and everything in between, the boats, the coastal waters, you know, everything, the ports, you name it. They can also direct the refineries to tell those refineries what they're allowed to refine. In other words, the federal government can push an emphasis for military fuels or jet fuel, if that's what they want, while minimizing things like diesel for the public sector. They can control all of this. It's all already law. Now, on top of all this, you know that, you know, the so-called peace talks have essentially fallen apart. This has been widely reported. Trump is now threatening them. Trump is claiming he's going to bomb Iran back into oblivion. Senator Lindsey Graham said, quote, "I spent 4.5 hours with the president, with President Trump on Friday. Here's what I think will happen next." He says, if this deal fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz over by force. We'll charge a fee for all those who go through to pay for the operation. If Iran contests control of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, we will obliterate them. So that's Lindsey Graham's statement. It doesn't really leave much to the imagination, does it? And then Iran has apparently issued a retaliation statement, although it's not exactly clear to me from which government agency this statement comes. But here's the statement, and just make of it what you will. The Iranian delegation will not return to negotiations in Switzerland unless U.S. President Trump apologizes for his threats and Israel withdraws from southern Lebanon. The pro-Hezbollah al-Mayadeen reports. Iran's state media confirms the Iranians have left the negotiation venue. Okay. But on the U.S. side, they claim the negotiations are still continuing. So there's an obvious contradiction there. But let's go back to what Lindsey Graham said. Oh, yeah. And then Trump, of course, is claiming that he's going to maybe kill the negotiators of Iran before they can even return home if they don't reopen the strait. So that's been circulating over the weekend. But Lindsey Graham is clearly stating that Trump is going to, or intends to, take over the strait by force. That would be a massive military operation. And then that the U.S. is going to charge a toll. So after all this time of berating Iran for wanting to charge a toll, and Trump saying no tolls, no tolls ever, now, according to Senator Lindsey Graham, the U.S. wants to charge a toll. And then Trump said separately that he wants to take 20% of all the oil that goes through the strait. What? So charge a toll, 20%, what? The U.S. military is bragging that something like 15 to 20 tankers went through the Strait of Hormuz with some number of million barrels of oil. Turns out those were all with Iran's permission. So that's not a, quote, opening of the Strait of Hormuz. And so the number of ships that sailed through the strait in the 24 hours before I'm recording this was only 3. So nowhere near the 100 plus that we need per day in order to restore the flow of oil and natural gas and everything else. So, by the way, here's a video of Lindsey Graham stating the things that I just attributed to him. Here he is saying them himself.
Let's try a diplomatic solution. I think it's going to fail. What happens next? I spent 4.5 hours with President Trump Friday. Here's what I think will happen next. If this deal fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz over by force. The United States will control the Strait of Hormuz, will charge a fee for all those who go through to pay for the operation, and we're going to expand the Abraham Accords in calendar year 2026. We're going to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords, and which is the biggest change in 5,000 years in the Mideast. And if Iran contests control of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, we will obliterate them. So to all the people listening, if this diplomatic effort fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz. Yep. We're going to run it. We're going to try to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords to end the Arab-Israeli conflict in 2026. And if Iran continues to attack Israel and Lebanon, the new policy will be we'll hit Iran. So to the Iranians, if you're listening, when you use Hezbollah to attack Israel, I think the new policy will be we will attack Iran.
Wow. So he says the U.S. is going to take the Strait of Hormuz. Okay. Didn't we already try that for the last 3+ months, almost 4 months, right? Hasn't it been almost 4 months now? It's coming up on that. Trump tweeted out over the weekend, U.S. could become the guardian angel of the Strait of Hormuz. Really? And take 20% of the oil, he said. We may take over the Strait if we have to. I'll blow the shit out of them. If they don't make a deal, we'll collect tolls. And that's according to, his appearance on Fox News. So, what? So, wait a minute. Now, Trump is saying, we're gonna collect the tolls. The U.S. is going to take 20% of the oil. We're going to control the strait, and we're going to collect the tolls. This is why observers watching this are concluding that Trump has lost his freaking mind, that he's just gone utterly insane, or he's like late stage dementia or something is going on. But again, there's an alternative explanation, which is what I'm offering here, is that Trump is trying to create a big emergency. He's trying to create, fuel scarcity, food scarcity, for the reasons I've mentioned here, to invoke the Defense Production Act and the NDAA and so on, maybe even the Stafford Act, right? But let's parse this a little bit more. What does he mean, we may take over the strait if we have to? How? You and what army, in other words? Because you already tried that, and your entire military failed multiple times. Failed. What are you going to try now that you haven't already tried, especially with your Navy practically having run out of munitions at this point? I mean, how many missiles do you really have left? How many air interceptors do you have left? How much food do you have left on the ship? How much, fuel for the non-nuclear ships, etc.? Aren't the sailors getting a little antsy? They've been held much longer than their deployment called for, at least on some of the ships. So how exactly are you going to do this? You and what army? Do you have 500,000 troops ready to land on the beaches like D-Day and storm Iran, and then take over the mountainous region of the south and southwest of Iran? Is that the plan? Because you would need to do that to control the strait. So Trump is back to delusional land, where he thinks that we can do anything we want because we're the United States, we're the strongest in the world, blah, blah, blah. But none of it actually adds up. He said, quote, if they don't make a deal, we'll collect tolls. How? So, by the way, in making this threat, Trump has already violated the very first paragraph of the Memorandum of Understanding, the MOU, which says that countries shall, quote, refrain from the threat or use of force against each other. it only took a few days for Trump to violate that, which, again, tells you he's either, one, totally bonkers, crazy, insane, or two, he's doing this on purpose. Now, I talked to Michael Yon. He says, for sure, Trump's doing this on purpose. Trump is trying to cause scarcity. He's trying to cause, you know, energy scarcity as well as food scarcity. And the whole point of this is, of course, well, like I'm talking about here, to have a much bigger emergency. What's astonishing to me is that oil prices plunged on Friday because Trump manages to keep this divergence in place between reality versus market expectations. So the markets think, oh, this is solved. Oil's going to be flowing again. Oil prices should be low. You know, this is all great news. That's what the markets think. In reality, there is no deal. The MOU is already thrown out the window. Trump is already threatening to bomb Iran, and so is Senator Graham. Trump's saying, we're going to charge a toll, we're going to take over the oil, we're going to take over the strait, etc. So none of that has been factored into the price of oil. None of it. Which means that there's probably, I mean, don't take this as investment advice, but there's probably a massive opportunity to go long on oil because it's very hard to see how oil doesn't go above $150 a barrel at some point here, like within a couple of months. Which means oil is probably going to double from where it is right now. Now, again, don't place bets on that. I'm not, because the situation is too volatile and too insane. And Trump can always manipulate it to the downside by announcing peace that isn't real. And Trump even admitted that in one of his interviews. I don't have the clip, but he even admitted it, that every time he says something good, the markets love it. Every time he talks about peace, the markets love it. So he wants to keep the markets in the green. He wants to keep, you know, stock prices going up and oil prices low. So he keeps saying there's great news, but in reality, there's never any good news. In reality, Trump is clearly, you know, all in with war here. And if anything, he's accelerating the escalation at this point. So if Trump thinks that America is going to collect tolls in the strait, then you have to assume that he thinks that we can control the strait. And there's just no realistic way that's going to happen anywhere in the real world outside of his head. Unless, I don't know, is he threatening to use nuclear weapons against Iran? Because that's what some of the lunatic Zionists, they seem to be calling for, nuclear weapons, right? And if this goes nuclear, then what does Russia do? What does China do? What does Pakistan do? See, the whole world has been trying to pull peace together here, except not the United States and not Israel. Everybody else in the world wants peace. Everybody else wants the oil to flow. They want the gas to flow. Israel wants the world to burn, and Trump wants to go down in history as not just the worst U.S. president ever in history, but the worst national leader of all time, spanning all centuries and millennia, long before the United States of America. Trump wants to go down in history as the lunatic that started World War III, that ended human civilization as we know it. That's a far worse failure than Herbert Hoover. Meanwhile, did you know that in Qatar, at the Ras Laffan gas facility, where already 2 out of the 14 LNG trains were destroyed with a up to 5-year repair time, well, there's been a new explosion there. We don't know exactly what's exploded, but it's massive. It's on fire. Probably a couple more trains have been blown up there. I'm just guessing. And Israel is blaming Iran. Probably Israel pulled this off. You know, this is probably a false flag to blame Iran. Almost certainly, because that's their specialty. So things are blowing up in Qatar. Trump is threatening Iran again. Trump doesn't seem to remember anything that he signed just a few days ago. And as a result, the war is back on. The war is back on. Meanwhile, Trump is bragging on social media that the Strait of Hormuz is open. and that he opened it. He's the reason it's closed, and it's not open. It's still closed. It was open before Trump launched the war, of course, and now it's closed, and it looks like it's going to remain closed, potentially for months to come. So, the upshot here, the bottom line, is that you should be prepared. I mean, all of us should be for this game. I mean, I don't even know how much more I can keep covering this because it's maddening. It's Groundhog Day every day. It's the same thing every single day. I don't know how much more I can cover it because we're stuck in a, you know, in a time loop, like I reported a couple of weeks ago. This is loop number 41, I think. So, you know, we're in a endless time loop. We're told there's peace, and then there's war, and then there's peace, and then there's war, over and over and over again. This probably doesn't end anytime this year. Probably. And I know everybody wants to be optimistic, and every time Trump announces a peace deal, people think, oh, it's finally peace, you know? And it never is. It's all a lie. But I understand that it's very convincing. You know, people want to be optimistic and they want to think that the future is going to be great. Yeah, probably not. You're probably going to face fuel rationing, maybe even food rationing if this gets worse. Certainly in some areas, it's going to get very bad, obviously. And our president is either insane or malicious. You know, he's either doing this on purpose or doing it accidentally. Either way, it's bad news. And I don't see an exit. I mean, the only shot we had was the one that he just threw away. The most recent memorandum was that was the way off this roller coaster. And Trump apparently has, you know, just decided to throw that away. So where this goes from here is almost certainly going to get worse and worse and worse. And that reemphasizes the importance of preparedness. So let me give you the resources and partners and sponsors here. Of course, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. Not only do they have the sat phones, they've got the power stations. They've got the solar panels. They have the Faraday bags and so much more. Plus a satellite phone when you need that because, well, if the power grid's down, the sat phone still works. For food and iodine and other supplies, visit our store, healthrangerstore.com. And there, you know, you can get backup certified organic, lab-tested food supplies, nutritional supplements, superfoods, personal care, ultra-clean, formulated with by far the best ingredients imaginable. Seriously, read the labels, you'll see. No synthetic fragrance, no toxic garbage chemicals, no GMOs in the formulations at all. So check it out, healthrangerstore.com. On top of that, of course, you can follow my interviews and my broadcasts, my podcasts, and more at brightvideos.com. And I'm going to be demonstrating more solar infrastructure setups. I've made a lot of progress, actually, setting up systems myself. And now I have to show it to you, which means I have to set it up in the studio. But I'm going to be doing that. I've got some interviews coming up, some guests coming in studio. We're going to be doing some pretty amazing things in studio to show you a solar setup. We're going to be charging Teslas from the studio. And yeah, it's crazy. Now, four of my employees have now bought Teslas. It was only two, like 10 days ago. Now it's four. Like my parking lot of my company is becoming a Tesla parking lot because like Tesla should pay me a commission or something. You know what I mean? Because I've sold so many Teslas just by mentioning the importance of being able to charge your own car with sunlight using solar panels in a little power station. Nobody trusts the supply of gas and diesel anymore. That's why people are trading in their combustion engine vehicles for Teslas. I'll cover that in another podcast, but that's happening. Really wild. I will keep you posted. Thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, brightvideos.com and naturalnews.com. Take care. Okay, I've got analysis for you of why China's export restrictions on indium compounds will almost certainly crash the AI data center infrastructure build-out bubble. So welcome to the special report. I'm Mike Adams. I'm an AI developer. I built multiple platforms using vibe coding, including brightlearn.ai and brightanswers.ai and many others. And I'm also an elemental scientist. I mean, I run a mass spec laboratory with elemental analysis using multiple mass spec instruments mostly for the food and supplements industry. That doesn't make me an optoelectronics engineer, but it does mean I have an understanding of elements and let's say the overall natural abundance or lack thereof of these elements. And indium is one of those elements that is not in great natural abundance. It's considered a rare earth, although, you know, that definition is kind of loose, but clearly indium is in the category of rare. Now, if you look at the table of elements, it's kind of interesting because indium is in the same column as boron, aluminum, and gallium, which tells you something about its atomic structure, of course. And gallium is also on China's export list, and gallium has some unique properties, some of which overlap indium's properties. And gallium is used, for example, in night vision optics and radar systems in particular that are necessary for the U.S. to manufacture, you know, well, military systems that have radar, including anti-air interceptors. So China makes the vast majority of the gallium that is exported in the world. And it turns out that China also makes around 70% of indium that is exported. I shouldn't say makes. I should say it mines and refines about 70% of the indium that is sold in the world. So I'm not going to turn this into a science class or anything, but, you know, these elements, boron, aluminum, gallium, and indium, they are all in the group 13 of the periodic table. They all have 3 electrons in their outermost orbital shell. And why that matters is because if you group it with or if you pair it with a group 15 element like phosphorus, which we'll get to in a second, then it yields a compound that shares some characteristics with silicon, but it has much better light transmission. And so for materials that need light transmission, such as solar panels or optoelectronics, that would be optical microchips, or, you know, let's say optical telecommunications equipment, like the kind you would use in AI data centers, huh? Starting to make sense. You need indium. You can't build these systems in silicon because silicon blocks the light. And it's called band gap engineering through special alloys. You can look that up if you want to know more details about the so-called band gap engineering. But basically, the upshot is that indium creates transparent conductors, such as indium tin oxide. It's electrically conductive and it's optically transparent. This is absolutely critical for a lot of things in data centers, but also things like touch screens or solar cells or electrodes that are embedded into displays, things like that. But when it comes to data centers, you know, you can't use copper wire to transmit the throughput that you need to connect all of the GPUs that are in the server racks, where some of these data centers might be running, I don't know, let's say 100,000 GPUs, okay? And when companies like, you know, SpaceX or OpenAI or Meta or Google or whoever, when they want to do very, very large model training or even Anthropic, they need to have extremely fast interconnections between the GPUs. Otherwise, model training slows to a crawl and things take years instead of, you know, days. So you have to have extremely fast transmission of data between the GPUs. And the only way to do that is with optoelectronics. You know, again, copper doesn't cut it. I mean, I'm thinking, like in my mini data center, I'm still using quite a bit of copper running at 10 Gs, so 10 gigabits per second copper wire. And that's getting really slow for me, by the way, because of all the data I'm working with. And I've just announced some big updates for brightlearn.ai and brightanswers.ai, by the way. I'll have those as a separate podcast. But I'm going to have to go all optical with my next upgrade of infrastructure, optical switches and everything, Whereas companies like, obviously, Google or whoever, you know, SpaceX, they've already gone everything optical. These data centers are being built with optical infrastructure in a huge way. So, in other words, they depend severely on indium. So, it turns out that China is now restricting indium exports, or let me say scrutinizing exports of just straight indium. Whereas even last year, in 2025, they put indium phosphide on an export control list. So remember when I said that if you pair indium, which is a group 13 element, with phosphorus, which is a group 15 element, then you get these special properties of transparency with electrical conductivity. So China is very aware of this, and that's why they added indium phosphide, which of course is indium and phosphorus in a configuration, to their export control list in early 2025. So that material is already controlled, and that alone has caused some kind of crazy price increase. Let me see if I can find the details. I think the prices, indium phosphide wafers, their prices have risen 250% in a little over a year, about a year and a half, it looks like, to now $5,000 per wafer. That's a 6-inch wafer, right? So that's the template onto which the optoelectronics, you know, circuitry, you could say, is eventually optically chiseled into it with the fabrication techniques, okay? But that's $5,000 a wafer now. It used to be a lot less than that. So that's huge. But now China is asking extra questions of purchasers of just the indium. Not even the indium phosphide, but just the indium. So it's being reported, and this was in Taiwan Press. This is where I found it. But it's being reported that there's extra scrutiny now of European buyers and U.S. buyers who are being asked to detail the end user information, including the destination country of where the indium is going. So you know how the United States, of course, pressured Europe to ban, well, especially the company ASML, which is the UV lithography equipment manufacturer. The U.S. pressured that company to block all exports to China so that China could not do high-end UV lithography and get their transistor size down to something like, you know, 2 or 3 nanometers. China is fighting back by blocking gallium exports and indium phosphide exports. This is going to dramatically hamper the U.S. AI data center build-out industry for all the obvious reasons. I mean, silicon just doesn't work. It doesn't absorb light at the proper wavelengths, but indium phosphide absolutely works very well, including for things like lasers and photo detectors, not just photo or optoelectronics. All of that and much more. Different modulators, you know, the light modulators, which are necessary for the optical telecom equipment to move large amounts of data, like terabits per second, basically. You know, I'm talking about very high speed bandwidth. You need indium. So essentially, you need optical transceivers, which is a kind of special, you know, high end networking cabling combined with special switches that can handle those transceivers. And there is no substitute in photonics. There's no substitute for indium phosphide, period. You know, mic drop, no substitute. You don't have indium, you don't have high-speed optical networking in your data centers, okay? So here's what's going to happen. The 70% of the global indium market is controlled by China. And there's another company that handles 80% of the substrate manufacturing. That's called AXT Sumitomo, which obviously is not Chinese, but they get the indium from China. Through these two companies, then you have this choke point on indium and substrate production that is absolutely horrifying to the AI data center build-out effort, including, by the way, orbital data centers. You still need very fast optical transmission of data between the effectively the GPUs or TPUs or whatever you're going to be using in orbit, you're going to need high speed, obviously, bandwidth there. So you need optics there. So I did a little bit more research on this. Here's a story out of mining.com. China's control over indium phosphide exports threatens AI data center rollout. See, they came to the same conclusion. And let's see, there's an interesting paragraph in here. It says that indium phosphide has emerged as a powerful trade weapon for Beijing that experts and executives say could disrupt the global rollout of AI data centers. Yep. Just like I said, indium phosphide, this is a quote, is one of several supply chain bottlenecks collectively gating AI data center buildouts, said Conrad Wong, a research analyst at SemiAnalysis. So why does all this matter? Because NVIDIA announced a $2 billion investment into each of these two U.S. photonic product makers. I'm reading from the article, Coherent and Lumentum. So those are, I guess those are U.S. companies. I had not heard of them, but they are opto or photonic product manufacturers. And there's a custom chip maker known as Marvel Technology, or Marvell, some people say. I use some of their 10 gig networking cards, by the way. They work great. That's not optical, that's just copper. But anyway, they have announced the acquisition of a semiconductor startup known as Celestial AI to acquire their work on photonics. So in other words, what you see is that even NVIDIA realizes we have to have a lot of photonics. We have to have photo or optoelectronics and optical transceivers in order to make these data centers work and in order to make AI scale. You have to have this. And that depends on indium. Isn't it amazing? The table of elements comes back to haunt the bubble. And it's not the only element that's haunting the bubble, by the way. There are other shortages. I already mentioned gallium. And there are others that I've talked about as well. And tungsten. Remember tungsten hexafluoride? I talked about that last week. WF6, as it's known, because W is the... That's the elemental symbol for tungsten, by the way. W. I know people are like, WF6? What is that? It's like, Wells Fargo? No, that's tungsten hexafluoride right there. So you can't make modern microchips without tungsten hexafluoride, it turns out. And you can't make modern optoelectronics without indium. So you see, the table of elements becomes just critical. And you see that China's dominance in not only the mining, but also the extraction of this element, which is mostly extracted from zinc mining, by the way. So if you dig tons and tons of rock out of the earth, and then you use a bunch of solvents to get the zinc out of it, right? I mean, that's common, you know, heat and pressure and solvents and whatever, you get a bunch of zinc out of it. Then the zinc that you get is slightly contaminated, you would say, with indium. Then you have to use another process of extraction to get the indium out of the zinc, because indium and zinc like to stick together, which is why they are found together in nature. Okay, it's like mercury and gold. Okay, actually, mercury sticks to everything, but mercury definitely sticks to gold. That's why gold miners use a bunch of mercury to pull the gold out of the soil and rock. Did you know that? You know why gold miners... The old school gold miners, you know why they all lose their minds and go crazy? Because they have a giant vat where they're cooking and boiling this giant stew of soil and rocks, and they pour mercury into it to bind with the gold. And then the mercury vapors come off of that, and they breathe in those mercury vapors, and they go insane, like dentists who drill on your mercury fillings, who are also inhaling mercury vapors. That's why dentists and gold miners go insane. The longer they do their jobs, the more insane they become, for the exact same reason. Isn't that interesting? See, the table of elements is very fascinating. the more you know about the table of elements, the more it explains the insanity in our world also, and also the scarcity and, you know, geopolitics and everything. So Trump likes to use trade weapons or tariffs as trade weapons, right? Trump likes to say, we're going to slap a tariff on you. China likes to say, well, we're just going to like quietly restrict your ability to buy, oh, I don't know, indium, you know, gallium, thallium, thulium, you know, it like that song by Tom Lehrer, you know, the Element song. I'm joking. That's a funny song. That's how China wages war. It's like, oh, you want elements? Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck. You see? And then the data centers are like, what are we going to do without indium? I don't know. Use lightning bugs? I don't know. So remember one of the companies I mentioned that NVIDIA invested in is called Lumentum. Apparently, according to this article, they're sold out through 2028. All the products they make, already sold. They've quadrupled their output, still can't keep up. And then in Taiwan, there are optical product makers such as VPEC and Landmark Optoelectronics. But guess what? They're not able to get permits for the substrate from the AXT company, probably because of the political friction between China and Taiwan. So China is kind of, you know, and they have a stranglehold on this product going to Taiwan, as well as the United States. Got it? So anyway, everywhere you go across this industry, no matter what companies you talk to, they're sold out for years to come. And then when you look at how they're trying to scale up production, even there's one company that has production in Texas, but it's going to take 2 to 3 years to scale it. And even then, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what the world needs. So, you know, we talked about when Trump announced all these projects and all these trillions of dollars coming in to build data centers, immediately I talked about, well, where are you going to get the transformers? This is a transformer shortage and a supply chain bottleneck. And then I also said, well, where are you going to get the gas turbines? Remember that? Because the gas turbines now have up to a 10-year wait time, depending on the capacity of the gas turbine. All the smaller turbines have been bought up by all the tech companies at this point. I even talked about, well, what about copper? You know, they're going to need a lot of copper and even some aluminum, etc. But those were just sort of surface level scarcity problems that I just knew off the top of my head. But if you dig into this, you get into things like indium. And that's a far worse scarcity problem because there's no solution that you can achieve in less than a few years. And even then, you know, where are you going to get the raw indium? Oh, by the way, I think I accidentally said AXT Sumitomo, but I think those are two separate companies, so I just want to clarify that. AXT is a Chinese company that makes the indium phosphide substrate. Okay. And Sumitomo, I see mentioned separately. Okay, so we're digging into this. Let's dig into who produces indium. So here's the fun part of this. You know how there's no or hardly any actual silver mines in the world? You know that silver is really produced as a byproduct of other mining, like zinc mining, for example, or in some cases, I think copper, whatever. There are almost no dedicated silver mines. Same thing with indium, but even more extreme. There are no dedicated indium mines in the world. It's not worth digging up tons of earth to try to get the tiny amount of indium. Indium, like I said earlier, is extracted from zinc ores. And the way it's pulled out, you know, there's solvent extraction. There's also what's called electrorefining, which is how a lot of other trace elements or rare earths are actually refined, by the way, even silver, by the way. So if you want to know where does indium come from, you need to know, like, where is there a lot of zinc mining where the zinc is further refined with this electrorefining and solvent extraction in order to harvest the indium. And I already said that China is 70% of the world's supply. You know, there's nobody else even close. The next in line is South Korea, which is, you know, less than half of what China produces. And then Japan, and then Canada, also as a byproduct of mining. And then after that, a bunch of other countries. Not None of them are the United States. There is indium recycling, by the way. So a lot of indium can be reclaimed from, you know, electronics. And so this happens in Japan, especially, and to some extent in the United States and so on. A lot of the reclaiming is indium tin oxide with reclaiming that from displays, for example. Japan is well known for doing that. But there are really no spare reserves or almost no spare reserves. There's no U.S. mining of indium. And there's no large U.S. reclamation of indium that could provide enough for the AI data center industry. It's not even close. Without China, you can't do it. So China can turn off the U.S. AI industry just like that, and they may be preparing to do that because now they're asking extra questions about indium exports. And again, they've already added, you know, indium phosphide. Now remember that China can just literally flick a switch and just block all exports of some of these elements, such as gallium. They can block it, boom, you know, on any given day. China always uses that as a leverage point in negotiations with the United States. Every time Trump loses his mind and says, you know, 50% tariff on everything out of China, then China just reminds Trump, oh yeah, well then we'll just completely block all gallium or some of these other elements. And then, you know, the Pentagon sends Trump a memo. Trump, you better reverse that because we can't make any missiles. We can't make anything without China's exports of these rare earths. And then Trump reverses himself, you know, within a week and says, oh, China, we love those guys. They're so awesome, such great guys. And then everything's back on. So every time Trump tries to play tough with China, China just starts citing the table of elements. You know, again, like singing the song from Tom Lehrer. And you might think from the name of the element being indium, you might think, well, surely it's, you know, it must be abundant in India. Except that's not how it got named. I had to look this up too, but it's very interesting. The name of indium actually comes from indigo, the color, because under spectroscopy, the element, it reflects a very bright indigo blue spectral line. So it's a beautiful indigo blue. And so they named it after the Latin word indicum, which means the indigo dye. So it's about the blue emission line in spectroscopy. There you go. You learned a little elemental trivia today on indium, not named after India. But there is another element, by the way, let's see, where is it? Moscovium. Pretty sure that's named after Moscow, where it was discovered. And there's also, there's a californium, and let's see, lawrencium. Yeah, a lot of these are named after Livermorium. Yeah, where they were discovered, the labs. Here it is, californium, einsteinium, fermium. Yeah, does any of this ring a bell? Mendelevium. Yeah, these are all nobelium. These are all, of course, famous physicists and scientists, etc. Here's one called protactinum. That's different from procrastinum, which they put that one off for a while. Then there's thorium and thulium. I mentioned earlier, erbium, holmium, dysprosium. Oh, that's one that China loves to say, no soup for you, no dysprosium for you. That's a favorite one of China right there. Neodymium, you know about that one, ND. Neodymium for magnets, and there's a neodymium in every EV, you know, every motor that has a regeneration function in it has neodymium magnets in it. And there's all kinds of great stuff. Just check out the table of elements. It matters. Very cool stuff. Okay. All right, so anyway, that's just a fun, interesting way to tell you that the US AI data centers are effed if China wants to flip the switch and stop the exports, and it looks like that's about to happen. So there you go. So the AI race to superintelligence, you know how the US tries to prevent China from having UV lithography equipment, and then China just says, well, we won't let you have these elements that you need for, you know, optical electronics and optic transceivers, whatever. And then China builds out its own data centers because it has massive scalability. It's got its own power grid that hasn't run out of power. They've got plenty of power and they're building more. And China's got its own supply chains and its own, you know, rare earth elements, its own mining, its own extraction. It's got its own scientists. I mean, and China is doing amazing, amazing things with optoelectronics. They just came up with a technology I was reading about earlier where they can almost literally stamp out an optical microchip grid at about 10% of the cost of what it normally takes today for the etching and the lithography. They can stamp it out using a whole new method I had never heard of before, but it's only for optoelectronics. So China is going to achieve economies of scale in the years ahead that will make compute extremely inexpensive. Microchips will be, you know, 10 times more powerful at 1/100th the cost per compute cycle. Things like that. That's what's coming over the next several years. China is engineering that future, and China has the elements that make that possible. So this is what happens when, you know, from America's point of view, this is what happens when you stop mining and you let China mine everything. You think you can always buy it from China. Sometimes it turns out you can't. Or this is what happened in Western Europe when they stopped developing their own energy infrastructure and they said, well, we can always buy energy from Russia. And then, you know, a couple of explosions later on, you know, the gas pipelines from Gazprom. And then guess what? Yeah, I guess we can't buy energy from Russia. So this is why domestic energy and domestic mining and rare earths extraction is extremely important. And despite what Trump has been announcing, there is no significant indium production scheduled in America anytime in the next decade. Nothing that matters. So we are entirely dependent on China. There you go. I'm still not happy that California got its own element, by the way. Why does California deserve an element, Californium? They should rename that one. It's ugly, too. It's CF. That's just an ugly element symbol. It's ugly. I mean, it should be more manly, like, you know, manganese. It's got man in the name. Manganese, you know? That's Californium. The element looks gay. that's totally gay. Gay elements. All right. Okay, did I take that too far? Sorry about that. Well, you know, as long as we're on genders, gallium has gal in it, and bromine starts with bro. So there you go. All right. Anyway, you can follow more of my analysis of what's going on. If I were you, I mean, don't take this as investment advice, obviously, but be very, very cautious if you are buying into this hype about the AI companies and all of their IPOs. They're going to hit a brick wall called no indium, you know, very soon, probably. And also no gallium and so on and so forth. No dysprosium. I mean, this is a very bad scenario unless full trade is restored around the world. That's why I've said, you know, politically that I wish Trump would just end the wars and just trade. Let's trade with the world. We have things to trade with each other. You know, if we could just have more trade with China, then we wouldn't have all these restrictions on these rare earths, and then we wouldn't run into, you know, maybe bubble market collapses in the AI data center build out. But be very cautious if you are investing in this. And if nobody has told you about indium, they're leaving that out. That's you need to know all about indium, especially for data centers because of the optical transmission, you know, the networking gear that's all optical transceivers and things like that. So check it out. If you want to follow more of my work, I'm at brightvideos.com and also naturalnews.com. And if you want to use the AI platforms that I built, which are awesome, trust me, brightlearn.ai now has over 65,000 books that you can download for free. They're all original books with original cover art. They were created by over 13,000 authors who created these books with the help of the AI engine I built. And now we have over 1,200 books in Spanish that are all free to download. We have hundreds in French now, and over 1,000 are coming in French. And then we've got over 1,000 audiobooks that are free to download right there. And you can also create your own books completely free. That's at brightlearn.ai. And you can use our deep research AI engine at brightanswers.ai for uncensored research with in-depth knowledge and strong citations of hundreds of millions of pages of documents that are in our own in-house research index. And I've just recently added 8,000 articles from Dr. Chris Martinson at Peak Prosperity. Those are now in the index. Plus, of course, all the articles at naturalnews.com and all of my interviews and things like that. But what's new is the 8,000 plus articles from Dr. Chris Martinson. So check that out at brightanswers.ai. And thank you for staying with me all the way to the end, Iam. Sorry, that was bad. And get it in endium? I know. All right, till next time. Take care. Okay, I've got a really great update for you here. If you love to use our AI engine, it's a deep research engine at brightanswers.ai. Or if you love to use our book creation engine at brightlearn.ai, either way, we now have added significant new indexed documents to our in-house search index that is incorporated into either the writing of the book or the formulation of your answer from brightanswers.ai. Now, those new articles that we've indexed are from Dr. Chris Martinson from peakprosperity.com. Dr. Martinson was kind enough to give me his entire collection of articles that he's written from 2008 to the present. It's a lot. It's about 8,000 plus, something like that. And so we did all the processing, you know, the data pipeline processing and cleanup and everything, and then the indexing, etc. So now when you ask a question at brightanswers.ai, even the free version will search all of our articles that are in our search index. So that's going to be natural news articles, which have also been updated, of course, and Green Med Info from Sayer G, and the Mercola.com articles from Dr. Joseph Mercola, who also donated those to this nonprofit project. In addition, Ty Bollinger from The Truth About Cancer, and ANH USA, that's the Alliance for Natural Health, and David Morgan, the Silver Guru, and a bunch of other people. And now, including Dr. Chris Martinson. So Dr. Martinson, as you may know, at peakprosperity.com, he's a very sharp guy. Love that cat. He's a sharp cat. He is smart, and he analyzes the situation in the world, economics, and health, and events, and so much more, geopolitics. And he's super sharp. And he has written some, you know, really powerful information over the years, over, like, what is that, 18 years or so? That's amazing. All of that is now incorporated into the answers at brightanswers.ai. So if you ask Bright Answers about questions, even maybe oil or economics or whatever, it's going to potentially incorporate answers from Dr. Chris Martinson. But that's up to the engine. It could incorporate answers from Natural News or Mercola.com or other sites or what have you. And that just, you know, depends on the nature of your question. Now, currently, see, you're searching millions of pages of articles that are indexed if you use the free version. But if you use a token at brightanswers.ai, and these are the tokens that you can get at healthrangerstore.com, you simply trade out your loyalty points for tokens. So, you know, 300 loyalty points, which you get for free after making a purchase there, that gives you one token, and then you can use the token at brightanswers.ai. In fact, each token can be used 10 times. So, you know, if you enter a token, it only uses up 10% of the token each time. When you use a token, it searches the hundreds of thousands of books that are now indexed, and it's now well over 300,000, by the way, even though it doesn't say that on the site. I haven't updated it. There are hundreds of thousands of science papers. There are podcasts and interviews in addition to the articles. So by using a token, you're going to get a much longer answer, and you're going to get much deeper research. And your prompt can be up to 70,000 characters. Whereas if you're using the free version, your prompt is limited to 5,000 characters. So this is how we distinguish between free versus the token version. And we welcome people to use it in both ways. If you want to use the free version, and we always have a free version. That's something that I'm committed to. I always want to make these tools available at some level for free. But then there's a token level that is much more detailed, much deeper research, much longer answers, etc. And frankly, if you use a token, it produces content that's suitable for articles or reports or scripts for videos or social media posts, all kinds of things like that. So you can use that engine right now. Again, it's at brightanswers.ai. And now, again, the answers may incorporate information from Dr. Chris Martinson and all the other people that I mentioned. Be sure to also visit brightlearn.ai. That's our book creation platform, because BrightLearn uses the same index of documents as its research for formulating the actual book outline, the chapters, and the chapter text. So now, if you create a book, and remember, you can create books of 5 chapters of length free of charge at brightlearn.ai. So if you create a book there, and if it's a book about anything that Dr. Chris Martinson has talked about, a lot of economics, a lot of finance, a lot of gold and oil and whatever, then probably Dr. Martinson is going to be cited in the book, along with other citations in the book as well. And that's the whole point. See, I built an engine that has almost zero hallucinations, unlike ChatGPT and other mainstream engines. My engine sources specific documents that are indexed in-house. And at this point, it's hundreds of millions of pages of different documents, from books to articles to spoken word transcripts and so on. So by creating a book, you're actually creating an amazing research project that's just packaged into a book format. And that's free. It's free to do. I know, it's crazy. How is that even free? Well, it's thanks to your support. So if you want to support us, shop with us at healthrangerstore.com. And you'll also get, you know, points that you can use for tokens to unlock longer books at BrightLearn or longer answers at BrightAnswers. And you're supporting us in the process. But one more thing I forgot to mention. If you use this at brightlearn.ai and you create books, did you know that you can use those books commercially? Because that's our licensing. We offer what's called Creative Commons Attribution Licensing. It's the default license. So you can create a book there, and then you can download the PDF, and as other people have done, you can then sell that book on Amazon Kindle. It can be a Kindle book. And we actually have a place where you can go download the cover art images. You have to log in as the creator of that book using your email address. And then you go to edit that book, and you can actually download the cover art images, and you can publish this on Amazon.com, and many people have, and you can sell it as a Kindle book, and you are welcome to do so. I encourage you to do that, and you don't have to pay me anything. In fact, we don't even have any way to know that you're publishing the book. You can sell the book. You can create 50 books and sell a package of 50 books. I encourage you to do this, and some people do. One guy on the site has created hundreds of books in a series, and they're great books because his prompting is really, really good. And I think he must be selling that package somewhere. I don't know, but I hope he is, because it's really valuable information. And you are welcome to use it in that way as well. Or if you currently already sell something else, maybe you sell a product, or you sell a membership, or you sell, maybe you take donations on some kind of like a fundraising site, and you want to offer people some kind of freebie bonus if they donate, this is perfect. You could create a book that's totally in line with your mission, and then when people donate to you, you give them the free book download. Ta-da! You know, you create a free bonus item, it costs you nothing, and it's expertly written. And by the way, if you don't like the PDF that you download from us, you can modify it using any PDF editor. It's not, you know, locked in. It's not DRM'd. There's no like copyright lockups or anything. You can just edit the book, turn it into the book you want, and then sell it and keep all the money yourself, 100%. I know, you're thinking, why would I do that? When I've had people tell me, like, this platform, this is a billion-dollar idea. You should monetize it. I'm like, I'd rather let you monetize it. I mean, let everybody else monetize it. You know, I like the price of free because my mission is to bring information to the world through brightanswers.ai and brightlearn.ai and make it available for free. That's my mission. I'm not trying to collect $1 billion off of this. I'm trying to reach 1 billion people. To me, that's way more important. So that's why. It's very simple. I know it's weird because in Western culture, very few people think like that. They're like, you should be thinking in dollars, not people, man. You know? Well, okay. That's not who I am. I think in people. How many people can we reach? That's how we change the world, at least in my opinion. So use the tools, share the tools, spread the word. Thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams. I'm the creator of both of those platforms. There's also brightnews.ai for real-time news analysis and brightvideos.com, which is my video site. And maybe you're watching it now. You can catch more of my videos right there at brightvideos.com. And you can also see my articles at naturalnews.com. So thanks for listening. Take care.
The Trump administration's going to put an import ban and create the great wall, the great firewall of America, and do exactly what China has done to us, which is they're going to start banning services, connections. It's going to start with a blacklist, and then it's eventually going to go to a whitelist, an invert, so that the only entities or internet that you can access is going to be blessed by the government. Decentralized.
Welcome to today's episode of Decentralized TV. We have a quick update from Zach Voorhees, the Google whistleblower. Because of all the extraordinary things that are happening with AI and LLMs and government bans and so on. So first, let me welcome Todd Pittner, my co-host. Welcome, Todd. Are you ready for our Zach Tech Update segment here?
Well, I just don't think it should be called that. I think it should be the Zach Adams effect, like the last time we got together.
Yeah, that's a good term you came up with. Yeah, but we got to run that by Zach and see what he thinks.
Yeah, that's right. I approve.
Let's bring Zach in. Yeah, hey, Zach, you like the Zach Adams effect?
Yeah, I approve of that. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, very cool. All right, Zach. So you and I have chatted a little bit offline. There's a lot of stuff happening. Give us the top priority here. Where do you want to begin with this segment?
Yeah, so the big news that everybody's talking about right now is the government coming out and banning Fable from Anthropic. This was their frontier model that was really, really good. And they released it. And then within 72 hours, the government sent them a letter saying, take it down. And then they clarified that the only people that could use this model were verified Americans and no foreign nationals, which included the employees of Anthropic themselves. They couldn't even use the model that they were building themselves, which means that Anthropic is essentially being told by the government to go touch grass. Wow. And now they're in a battle with the government. The government is saying that they're going to keep this essentially an export control over this model, as long as anybody anywhere is able to jailbreak it at all. Now, here's the problem. This jailbreak was posted by an anonymous poster. And what he was able to do is that he was able to use a combination of Cyrillic, which is, you know, a Russian alphabet, Unicode, and also breaking down the request into smaller requests. And from that, he was able to ask the question that by itself in its entirety, the guardrails called Project Glasswing would prevent, right? And so by breaking it up into little smaller chunks and asking each chunk, the model was not able to figure out what the full question was. And so it was able to give basically uncensored results back to the individual. And he posted this. It got over 1 million views on Twitter. And that's when the government responded and said, take this model
keep
down.
Keep going, Zach. I just want to let our audience know, I think we lost Todd's connection. So the video kind of freaked out. But just keep going.
Yeah.
We'll fix it as you're talking.
Great. So, essentially, this is where we're at the stalemate. Now, what's really, what's an unfortunate thing is that what happened next was the, U.S. government's biggest self-own, in the last month or last year for artificial intelligence, because China came around and said, look, GLM 5.2 nipping at the heels of Fable 5 model, right?
Totally.
Now, the U.S. government doesn't have an export control. You can use a frontier model now, as long as it's Chinese.
Yeah. And like you, Zach, I downloaded all the open weights of GLM 5.2, I think yesterday, even though I can't run it because I don't have enough hardware to run it locally. But one day I will, and I want to make sure I've got the model. I'm not going to let the government come along and ban that. So to your point, the U.S. just basically is handing, the future of AI implementation to China by banning Anthropic models.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah, it's like, what are we even doing, right? Now, what was interesting is that just yesterday, June 17th, Reuters ran a new story saying the Trump administration has decided not to ban DeepSeek R1 yet, which means that there's a ban coming, right? They did the same thing with TikTok. And what's really interesting that I see is that when I look at all these, the API pricing for these models, like Anthropic's Fable, Opus 4.8, they're really expensive, really, really, really expensive. And all of these Chinese models that are coming out, DeepSeek R1, GLM, Qwen, Minimax, M3, they're all at a fraction of the price of these models. And unlike before, when these models were very weak, now they are very, 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 very good. They are almost at the level of what the frontier United States is able to make.
And when you say a fraction of the cost, in some cases it's 50 times less, other cases even higher, right? I mean, it's not even close.
Correct. And this begs the question, why are all these companies paying, more in their more in their token usage than in their own employees, right? I think the NVIDIA CEO said that, if there's a $500,000 employee and they're not spending $250,000 in tokens, they need to be fired, right? But that, just to give you the scale, $250,000 is more than most engineers make as a salary.
Right.
Right. And so the question is, why is a company going to spend $250,000 a year if a Chinese model that's almost as good and pretty soon may actually be better can do the same task at $25,000?
Right.
Now, I think I've got an answer. The Trump administration's going to put an import ban and create the great wall, the great firewall of America, and do exactly what China has done to us, which is they're going to start banning services, connections. It's going to start with a blacklist, and then it's eventually going to go to a whitelist, an invert, so that the only entities or internet that you can access is going to be blessed by the government.
So wait a second, Zach. Are you saying that you think the U.S. government will not just ban the use of those Chinese models in government,
which it can easily do. That's legal. Are you saying it would try to strip those models off of Hugging Face, and it would try to control GitHub, and it would like ban, it would criminalize us downloading these open weights from China from like a Qwen model or something? Are you kidding me?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's not going to happen all at once. It's going to happen in stages, right? First come the blacklist. Hey, you can't access this website. You can't access that website. Then it's going to come for the whitelists, which is like you can only access this site if it's been approved by the U.S. government. Then what they're going to do is that they're going to declare that these open models are problematic and unsafe. And they need to be proved to the U.S. government that they can naturally run within the borders of the United States. And if you can't prove that, they're going to pull them from the open source repositories like Hugging Face, which is an open source repository of these models. And now here's the problem. How do you figure out what these models are actually doing? How do you know that inside isn't lurking some sort of, you know, malicious intent that's been, you know, embedded into the weights of, you know, essentially, you know, like a 230 gigabyte CSV file. And it's just a list of weights.
That could just be, you know, malicious intent could be triggered by anything, but these are all black boxes. OpenAI doesn't even know what their model's capable of. Not really. Right?
Correct.
And nor Google.
It's very, I mean, and the thing is that understanding like the forensics of these AI models and figuring out what it is that they actually do when you just have the model itself and not running it, just static analysis. That's a frontier question that has not been answered. And so, you know, this ability for the Chinese government or these Chinese companies to prove that their models are harmless and they don't have any, you know, mal intent is virtually impossible.
Okay, Zach, I have the solution. The Trump will announce you can have any model you want as long as it runs on an Apple II, which apparently is really good at AI from 1979. That's amazing. Go ahead, Todd. You're back. So welcome back, Todd.
Yeah. Thank you. Based upon what I'm hearing, is it fair to say, Zach, now that AI model access is now becoming a national security weapon?
That is absolutely what I'm saying, yes. And this is the first step that they've taken to essentially declare war on AI.
Wow. So the real AI risk is not that it becomes too powerful, but it becomes too controlled, right? I mean, at bottom, would you say?
Yeah, and the big risk too is that, look, these big tech corporations, they've already gone through the door. And what we're seeing is we're seeing that trap door shut.
Mm.
And what's going to happen is that, you know, Google is going to be powerful enough to run the frontier models. Joe Schmo with his, you know, gaming graphics card is not at this point going to be able to run this stuff. And so it's the little guy that's at the mercy of these government, you know, edicts that say that you can't run this model anymore.
As an end user, I could download even a US model. I could download Gemma 4 from Google and I can run Heretic, right? I can strip guardrails on my own computer running like, you know, mid-level consumer grade hardware. I can turn the model into an uncensored model that could write all kinds of malicious code, although that's not what I do with it. I just want it to stop lecturing me about vaccines. You know what I mean? But anybody can take it and do that. Are you thinking the day is coming when that would be considered contraband and police will raid people's homes to confiscate their uncensored models?
That's coming. I absolutely believe that that's coming. And the reason why the reason why they have to do this is because as these models get more and more powerful, they're not going to want to have somebody like a Mike Adams that's going to be having access to an unregulated artificial intelligence, because that artificial intelligence with its, I mean, it's essentially godlike intelligence, a poly expert in everything that's smarter than any person that's ever lived, whispering into your ear and basically creating an AI Mike Adams Jesus that's going to go out there and, you know, tell the truth.
That's an instant meme you just described, the AI Mike Adams Jesus meme. But you're right. That's exactly what I would do with AI. I want to tell the truth. I want to help people. I want to uplift people. But the governments of the world absolutely want to have information scarcity, knowledge scarcity. Their desire is to keep people ignorant. So, of course, they would do exactly what you said. How close are we to this happening, you think?
I think that right now, we're at what, mid-year? So, you know, June. I think that by the end of, December 2026, it's going to be a completely different battlescape. I think that what's going to happen is that we're going to have blacklists fully in place against these Chinese AI models. And if this wasn't the case, if this wasn't the expectation, what I would expect is I would expect right now a price drop with Anthropic and OpenAI, because they're like, well, we've got to compete against these Chinese models. Well, they're not doing that. Like, they're trying to increase their price in the face of these Chinese models. It's almost like they expect that the government's going to soon step in and start blacklisting these models and take out their competition.
Well, it's just like the government bans Chinese cars from being imported into the U.S. to protect Ford and Tesla, et cetera, even though Chinese EVs are very advanced. But Zach, this becomes a First Amendment issue. Code is speech. You know, lots of cases, including Supreme Court cases, have protected free speech rights or freedom of speech expression through computer code. Although there's been intrusions on that in terms of 3D printing code for printing gun parts and things like that at the state level. But don't you think this is going to result in a Supreme Court battle?
Sure, it's going to, you know, result in a Supreme Court battle, and they're going to side with the government. Because the thing is that unlike regular software, right? Software is an expression of human code, human design, human expression. In the case of an AI model, it's one degree of separation removed, right? So the human made the code, the harness, the training model to train the AI, but they didn't actually train the AI itself. They created a program to train the AI. So does that mean that by extension, by transitivity, the downstream model inherits all of the free expression of the individual for creating the test harness? I think the government's going to come in there and say no. And I think the Supreme Court's going to agree with them. Because look, if the Supreme Court does not agree with them, the government loses all control. Like, governments rule by narrative and by policy. And if they have a whole bunch of AI models out there contradicting, you know, the narrative and turning the people against the government, especially the employees that are the operators within the system, the whole system's going to collapse. And I don't think the elites are that dumb. I don't think they're going to allow a system collapse. Instead, what they're going to do is they're just going to chop off the rights of the citizens themselves in order to essentially wage a narrative, war, which is what you see right now.
That's going to put us so far behind in the world. If China has all the AI models and all the, you know, the STEM graduates and the scientists, and they're kicking ass with sparse attention science papers from DeepSeek, and we, you know, America is censored and, you know, our hands are chopped off. You can't use AI. You have to stay stupid. You have to use these government approved models that tell you that, you know, Building 7 just fell because it was on fire. You know, stupid things. Then America's toast. We can't compete in the world. Our corporations can't compete. Our biotech can't compete if we don't have access to open source AI. And, right? I mean, I know you you probably see this.
So what you're describing is the main contradiction, right? If they do nothing and they let this AI explode, then what's going to happen is that they're going to face a collapse early. But if they censor the AI and they lock it down, we're going to be outcompeted by China and we'll collapse later. Mm-hmm. And so right now what you see, or what I think is going to happen, is that they're going to try to find a middle balance between not collapsing soon and not collapsing later. And right now, I don't see a pathway out, because the United States has been, you know, the foreign aggressor. We've killed so many people. We've been behind, like Standard Oil was funding Adolf Hitler, right? It's when these things come out, it's going to demoralize the population when we're like, oh my God, we're actually behind all these things. In fact, we were behind, you know, in a large part, the Bolshevik Revolution, right? And communism, spreading communism within the Slavic countries. China, on the other hand, as a competitor, doesn't have that narrative. which means that they can be more honest and be less have less censorship with their models, which means that they're going to be able to get the performance, benefits of that. And so what's the United States going to do? They don't want to have Americans learn the truth of what their country really is like. But at the same time, they don't want to censor too much because they want to compete against China. And any time that you censor, what happens is that you diminish the effectiveness mm-hmm. of your AI.
Wow.
Wow.
Todd.
I mean, this show is about decentralization, and I never thought in my wildest imagination that, you know, AI self-custody would be a thing, right?
Yeah, that's the right way to put it.
I mean, it sounds like AI self-custody, but with fewer seed phrases and more GPUs. I don't know. It just, this is just nuts. Let me ask you this, Zach. Do you expect a major business disruption from an AI model cut off in the next 12 months? How can this impact us?
So the biggest disruption that I see right now is the giant corporations are going to be disrupted by all of these startups, right? Like, for example, there's a lot of people that if you have a GitHub repo with 5,000 stars or more, Anthropic is going to sponsor you. Right. I may or may not be sponsored in that same way. But with that model, with basically what you're going to get is you're going to get, a free subscription program to Claude, Anthropic's Claude, Opus, Fable, however, whatever model that you're going to choose. And the big corporations are not getting this. Now, here's and that multiplies because not only do people that have these open source repositories get a free subscription price that's valued at $200. The same API rates, like that subscription is not something that's offered to corporations. They instead have to pay an API pricing. And that API pricing is 10 times more expensive than the subscription pricing. So let's say you got an open source contributor, they get a free $200 account subscription model. Equivalently, if Google were to buy that for their employees, that would be about $2,500 worth of inference API, right? And so right now, what you see is you see that these big corporations are paying all this money. The little guys like me are not. And what's happening right now is that there's this major disruptive force that's brewing under the surface. Because you got to keep in mind, these programming models didn't get sort of like hands-free until around December with the launch of like Opus. It was either 4.6 or 4.7. It got really, 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 really good. And the major structural advantage that an individual has that somebody like Google, doesn't have this advantage is the fact that an individual doesn't have a bureaucracy, mm-hmm. right? Like, these large corporations have this entire bureaucratic structure so that they can make sure that their moneymaker doesn't break. And they know, hey, look, when we decide that we're going to do something, we've got all these people, we can push and we can get this large ship with a lot of inertia and we can start moving it. And then once it's going, nobody can stop that innovation when everything's aligned.
Except if to do so, you have to rent permission, right? Isn't that
what I'm saying is that an individual like myself, we can turn on a dime. We don't have like a committee that we got to go to. We're like, I'm going to do that. Right. And then you go and do that. And then you launch, a swarm of 20 agents to go out there, see what the prior art is, copy that source code. And the great thing is that in the past, it was easier to copy than to re-implement. Now it's actually easier to re-implement than to copy.
Wow.
And so all of these open source like moats or these code moats that they had, where it's like, well, are you going to re-implement the entire thing? Actually, that's exactly what we're doing. And right now you're just seeing this huge disruption that's brewing underneath. Now it hasn't happened yet because the models just got good and there's this lag of innovation that's coming as people like myself figure out how to, copy the source code, clean it up. There's still a problem of that, when you have all this innovation, bugs sort of get injected. It's almost like the game Asteroids, where you blow up an asteroid and it breaks into two things. That's almost like implementing a feature. And as you do that, you create two bugs. Then you fix those two bugs. And it breaks up into four smaller bugs. But at the end of the day, yeah, at the end of the day, you've got a swarm of 20 agents. You're gonna be able to like fix all these bugs.
Wow.
Okay, so, we got to wrap this up. We're almost out of time. I want to be sure. I'm sorry to interrupt. What you said makes perfect sense, but I want to give out your website, zachvoorhees.com, where people can follow you there. And then your Twitter handle again. What is that?
Perpetual Maniac.
Perpetual Maniac on X. Also, yeah. I want to say, I think you're going to be joining us nearly every week for an update like this, correct?
Correct.
All right. That sounds awesome because we have a lot to talk about. One final thing, folks. My AI engine for deep research is called brightanswers.ai. This is exactly the kind of thing that the government probably wants to ban because it tells the truth about so many topics. So I'm going to do my best to keep that alive. But what Todd said is key. Self-custody your machine cognition. Own your hardware and get your open source models and run it locally and get it all done. Copy all the models. Download from Hugging Face before December that Zach is warning about. So Zach, thank you for the update today. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Until next time.
Okay.
Thank you. See you next week.
Take care, Zach. Thank you so much. Okay. There we go. Episode one of the Zach Adams Effect. Thanks Todd for the name.
You're welcome.
Vanishing Todd. There he goes. All right. That's a wrap for today's episode here of the Zach Adams Effect. Thanks to Zach Voorhees. And we'll bring you another episode next week. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me here today, and Todd Pittner here on decentralize.tv. Take care.
Cheers.
Join the official discussion channel for this show on Telegram at t.me/decentralizedtv, where you can ask questions or offer suggestions of who we should interview next. Also, be sure to subscribe to the email newsletter on decentralize.tv, where you'll be alerted about one day in advance of each new upcoming episode before it gets published. On decentralized.tv, you'll also find links to our video channels and social media channels across all platforms, including Brighteon, Rumble, BitChute, Twitter, Truth Social, and more. Check it all out at decentralized.tv.
Power up with our organic whey protein powder, a complete protein packed with amino acids, non-GMO, and lab-tested for purity. Stock up now for your survival pantry at healthrangerstore.com.